Our next case of the day is State versus Brown. State versus Brown. Good afternoon. Yes.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, please, Court, if I could reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Good afternoon. My name is Bill Chapin. I'm representing Mr. Brown in this case. This is a rather unique case in the sense that Mr. Brown filed a post-conviction action. The post-conviction action was denied. That order was issued on or about September 17th of 2020. My understanding that his counsel contacted him, said, hey, we got an adverse order, and then things went silent and went silent for quite a while until the court took its action and sent him a copy on or about December 9th of 2020. Obviously, one should be chuckling about this, but one of the key problems is that if you have a 30-day period to appeal and you don't get your order for 60, 75 days after the after it's been issued, that throws a real quagmire on your process to appeal it. So they sent it out on the 9th. He got it, went to the Department of Corrections, because obviously Mr. Brown was found guilty. So he's not free to just roam about, he's incarcerated. And it sent it to the Department of Corrections, and they received it. If you look at the documents, and I apologize for not being able to show specifically cite this side, but that's in the record in the transcript. They got it on December 14th. I think in my brief, I misspoke because I said we weren't sure when Mr. Brown got it, but Mr. Brown says in his motion for reconsideration, he got it on December 14th. So the department must have clearly sent it. Once they got it, they must have walked it down to him and said, here, here's your order. Because he indicated in his motion for reconsideration and to vacate, which is before the court today, that he got it on the 14th. So he got it on the 14th and he files his motion. He files his motion on January 12th. And I don't want to get into the politics of the U.S. mail or who the current postmaster is or whether we like the guy or not like the guy. But the court didn't get it till January 19th, 7 days after he put it in the mailbox. So that's what causes all these delays. On the 20th, his appointed counsel, I think, filed a motion to withdraw that was granted. On the 22nd, the court then dismissed his motion for reconsideration, summarily dismissed his motion for reconsideration. What we're basically asking the court to do is to set aside that denial. And the reason for that is because I think it's important that the court listens to Mr. Brown on his motion to reconsider and vacate the judgment so that Mr. Brown can have an opportunity to argue why he should have gotten proper notice of the original order in September. And this becomes more of a, this becomes such a procedural quagmire, I'm probably not even equipped to talk about it, to be honest with you. So I'm gonna kind of glaze over it. But, and whether you're a fan or not a fan of Rose versus Lundy and those federal cases that come down off of that, which was Sandra Day O'Connor's first opinion, is my understanding. So that shows you the age that we're talking about, shows you my age. But the problem is that from a federal court of appeals, for a habeas corpus or for any kind of action to be brought in federal court, Mr. Brown has to exhaust all his state remedies. You're hardly able to exhaust all your state remedies when you don't even know the order's been issued and you don't can't finally timely file the order. So even though the state argues, well, you can't go back and modify or vacate, I think you can vacate. I think you can do a non-proton. I think there are remedies that would allow Mr. Brown an opportunity to argue his original post-conviction. But in order to do that, the court, the lower court, would have to at least give him some ample opportunity to argue why it should consider his motion to vacate.
So your position is the court needed to provide him with an opportunity, an evidentiary hearing, to determine why he wasn't able to appeal on time such that he has an opportunity to appeal.
Well, I think the court needs to figure out why he didn't appeal on time, yes, and figure out that, well, if you didn't appeal on time, what's the equitable remedy that we as a court can provide you? Because the district court could provide him an equitable remedy of saying, look, I'm not clear, I don't like this, you know, trial counsel, and I get into ineffective, I call it trial counsel, but it's ineffective assistance of his post-conviction relief counsel, that really should have made sure he got the order. And I realize this is Butler County, and, you know, quite frankly, Butler County is like 60 minutes from Lincoln. People can argue, well, should you drive 60 minutes to deliver an order to your client who's at D&E or at, you know, State Pen or whatever. But there are other ways to get him that order other than driving it down there. But clearly, it's clear from the evidence before this court, he didn't get the order, so he can't appeal the order.
He didn't get the order, but there's no dispute that his counsel got the order, right?
I don't think there's any dispute that his counsel got the order.
Because his counsel informed him the day before his 30 days was going to run, right? Or pretty close there too.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So what effect does that have?
Well, I think that's an interesting point, because I think as I was sitting here today, what I realized is we have certain rules about notice, and one of them is 30 days to appeal. But the other thing we have is, like, for example, when your person is served a copy of their information, they have 24 hours to review it before they enter a plea. Now, anyone who's done criminal work knows that 99% of the time, the sheriff hands it to you, you walk in, you waive your 24 hours, and you plead because you're pleading not guilty, and your defense attorney tells you, hey, look it. The 24 hours gives you time to review this, to look at who's going to testify against you, to think about what you want to plead, et cetera. Well, the question becomes, why would we offer them 24 hours? So that they have an opportunity to know what's going on. The reason for the 30 days is to make sure that he has an opportunity to know what's going on. That's what due process is all about, is to know what's going on, to actively reflect about the judgment, to actually reflect as to what you think is wrong, and to prepare your appeal. I mean, the notice of appeal, let's not kid ourselves, the notice of appeal is a paragraph. It's real simple to file. But when it comes to preparing a transcript or a recipe, that takes a little bit more time, because you have to, obviously, you should try to include all the essential documents, and you should include the proper testimony or whatever.
Well, those are a little different in that the service requires service on the actual defendant. The providing of an order goes to counsel.
Right, I understand that. But the problem is that because counsel didn't provide the defendant, or the appellant in this case, with a copy of the order, how does the appellant know what he's supposed to appeal, what the issues are he's supposed to appeal, what was or wasn't said in the order?
He withdrew too, didn't he?
Well, that's the other problem. He withdrew. He sent a letter saying he was withdrawing. Then I think he was reappointed on the motion for reconsider. Then he withdrew again.
The district court, though, didn't consider what we're talking about right now, right? Didn't consider these issues. Didn't the court just say that procedurally you can't challenge this?
Yeah, basically, in a nutshell, they said no.
Untitled.
I don't want to.
It's untitled.
Judge Merrickwin's the great judge. I don't want to downplay it. But there was no consideration. It was like dismissed. Too late. I don't want to hear about it. I mean, there was no argument. And that's part of what we're arguing about, is that that's where the abuse of discretion comes in, because the bigger issue becomes, again, the bigger issue becomes notice, you know. And I understand that the attorney gets notice, but even then, the attorney can't, there's got to be more than, hey, you know, tomorrow's your deadline to file an appeal. You know, there's got to be tomorrow, you know, we got an adverse decision. I'm going to send it to you. Give me a call in a couple of weeks. Let me know what you want to do, you know. I can tell you right now, after reading it, I wouldn't appeal it. Or, as in this case, you don't have any choice but to appeal it, because if you don't appeal it, you're never going to be able to bring a federal case, because you're barred by Rose versus Lundy. You've got to exhaust all your state remedies. And I'm not jumping up and down about all these procedures, but what I'm saying is that's the case. That's what you have to do as a defense attorney. So you have to do it. That's part of how our process works. The problem in this case is simply that between the court, the defense attorney, and I guess even I realize the county attorney doesn't have any obligation to contact Mr. Brown at all, but the court and the defense attorney, by not contacting Mr. Brown and telling Mr. Brown what's going on, have literally denied him his right to appeal, his right to, or, you know, to appeal to this court, to ask for further review to the Supreme Court, and has denied him any kind of federal remedy.
But doesn't the court meet its obligation by providing notice to his counsel? I mean, we've never told the court they have to.
No, I think the court meets, I think the court meets our obligation by notifying the counsel, but once the court's notified that counsel didn't notify you, then I think the court has to step in and correct it.
And provided a copy of the order, which the clerk did.
The court did, a little late, but I mean, the court did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalee, the state of Nebraska. Pun argues the district court erred in denying his motion to reconsider and that he received ineffective assistance of appellate, post-conviction counsel. It's an important difference. The state believes the district court correctly denied the motion and that appellant has no claim for ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel. And we ask you to affirm the judgment of the district court.
So Ms. Duffy, the court denied it as untimely.
Correct.
What's the time limit on filing a motion to vacate and a motion to reconsider?
Well, Your Honor, actually, that was a little interesting this morning. I was doing some digging. The statute governing the court's inherent authority to modify its orders, which is 25-2001, subsection 1, just notes that the powers of a district court to vacate or modify its judgments or orders during the term may also be exercised at the end of the term upon the same grounds upon a motion filed within 6 months after the entry of the judgment or order.
Which this was.
Yes, correct. I think that this court can affirm for a different reason, and that would be that the remedy that appellant sought was unable to be granted by the district court. The Nebraska Supreme Court has stated that while a district court does have the power to modify its own orders, it does not have the power to do so just for the purpose of extending the time to appeal, that it cannot use this authority to circumvent the deadlines for appeal that the legislature has put in place.
Is that Ewing?
In my brief, Your Honor, cited in Ray, in Ray Interest of Luz P. 295 NEB 814 from 2017.
But are you familiar with State versus Parnell and
yes,
State
Your
versus
Honor.
Jones?
Yes, Your Honor. I actually handled State v. Jones. And the difference there is that those all made allegations of official misconduct. So a misconduct in Jones, it was, I believe, a prison mailroom official. This makes no allegation that either the clerk of the district court was negligent in notifying or in serving notice as required, or that appellant had put his post-conviction or his appeal in the mail, and by some no fault of his own, but through the prison staff, it was not timely delivered. And here, there's not a claim of official negligence.
But isn't that a decision on the merits? It's not a decision on whether his motion was timely filed or not.
Well, I think the district court was still, this court could affirm on the basis that the district court was correct to deny the motion, but do it on the basis that it could not grant the relief that he sought. And so I think that whether it was timely filed or not, you know, whether he, I guess I'm not really sure about the timeline, you know, if he'd filed it 6 months and one day after so that it was no longer timely filed, that would have been a basis to deny the motion. It could also have been a basis that the relief that he sought could not be granted.
But procedurally, mm-hmm. Right, he had a right to bring this, and then there should have been an evidentiary hearing so we could look at that evidence and determine whether or not on the merits.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know that an evidentiary hearing was actually necessary, because even if the evidence had showed that, just as he alleged, that his counsel did not inform him until 2 days, you know, prior to the deadline or whatever it was, the court still could not grant him the relief he sought, because the process outlined in Parnell and Jones is for official negligence. And this was not an allegation of official negligence.
But it does exist in an area where, and you alluded to this earlier when you said it's a difference because this is post-conviction counsel on the ineffective claim.
Correct.
There is no relief for ineffective assistance of post-conviction counsel.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So where does that leave this man? I mean, I know Parnell and Jones talk about official acts, but I don't think our Supreme Court has ever addressed what if it's post-convictions acts.
And Your Honor, I understand that this court has some concerns about what occurred, and I don't mean to dismiss that, but I think the issue ultimately is whether there is a remedy in place to grant him an appeal, and the state does not see that there is. I will note for this court that appellant did file this motion to reconsider, which asked, on the one hand, for the court to vacate and reissue its order to allow him to appeal, and then the alternate to reconsider its order denying his motion for post-conviction relief without an evidentiary hearing. And he has now appealed the denial of that reconsideration to this court. And the state addressed the arguments, the post-conviction claims in its brief. So I understand that this is now an abuse of discretion standard, which is different from an appeal from a denial of a post-conviction. But there is still some level of review that he is receiving. I understand it's not what he may have received had things come out differently. But again, ultimately, I circle back to, I don't see a remedy here because the Parnell and Jones process is for official misconduct, and that's not what occurred here.
Question, State versus Jones, you said you were involved in that.
Yes,
Your Honor. What was the basis by which the motion to vacate was filed? Is that a 25-2001? Is that the procedural mechanism?
Your Honor, I cannot recall on that instance. I have the case here, but I don't remember if
I'm not sure it's in
the if the opinion set, and I apologize, it was about a year ago. I did not look that closely into that. Again, I guess if this court believes that his motion was untimely filed, that works out for me as well. But based on the statute and the district court's term, I believe that it was within the 6 months deadline. As noted in brief, the state believes not only was the motion correctly denied because the court could not grant the remedy he sought, but the motion to reconsider its order on denying his claims on post-conviction without an evidentiary hearing was also correct because the claims either were not sufficiently stated, were disputed by the record in this case, or he could not establish prejudice from them. So we believe that the district court correctly it was correct to not grant reconsideration and issue a new order finding that he is entitled to an evidentiary hearing in this case. As previously discussed, just briefly, appellant is not entitled, there's not a constitutional right to post-conviction counsel, and so post-conviction relief cannot be obtained on this basis. I am happy to take additional questions from this court, but if there are none, we request that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I believe Mr. Chapin was out of time. That's correct. All right. So the case is submitted and counsel is excused.
Thank you.
Thank you for appearing.